There's a lot to talk about in Parshas Vayera, more than we could possibly have time for today. And the Haftorah is also very packed. But one of the main themes, there's a couple of themes that connect the Parsha and the Haftorah, but one of the main themes is that of Chesed, and particularly Hachnasas Orchim. And in that vein, I want to dedicate today's shiur to a woman who was devoted to chesed her whole life, especially Achnasas Orchim and all kinds of chesed, and that is my mother-in-law, whose yahrzeit is today, Rebbetzin Shendel Feuerstein, Olam Shalom, Shendel Gittel, Basad Azuchayim. Should be a zchus for all of us. So the Parsha has, as we mentioned, quite a bit in it, and it's quite intense. Chesed is the opening theme, and particularly through Hachnasas Orchim, and that is one of a number of ideas that links the Parsha and the Haftarah. There are other clear links as well, but the Parsha begins with the Haftarah, the Parsha begins with the Chesed of Avraham Avinu and taking care of the angels, and the Haftarah, which has a couple of themes to it. Maybe we'll come back to some of the point-by-point themes afterwards, but one of the major parts of the Haftorah is that the Isha HaShunamis takes care of Elisha. That Elisha, the Talmud Mufak of Eliyahu HaNavi, is given hospitality by this Isha HaShunamis. And therefore, both the Parsha and the Haftorah have a focus on this, and it's an incredibly important mitzvah. There's a lot that's derived, we'll talk a little bit about the path from the Parsha to the Haftorah. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos, and Daf Kuf Chav Zayin, that Gedol HaHachnasas Orchim Yoser Me'akbal Shpnei Shechina. That HaHachnasas Orchim is such an important mitzvah that it's even greater than Kabbalah Shpnei Hashchina. And how do we know that? Because it sounds like that was happening with Avraham Avinu, that in the beginning of the parasha, he is being visited by God. And it sounds like, it's a machlokas in the Gemara and Shavuos actually, how to read the psukim exactly, but one way to read the psukim is that he tells God to wait so that he can go attend to his guests. So just to see the way the first few psukim go, here God comes to visit him, and in the middle of his visit, it sounds like he looks up and he sees so he gets up and he runs to go greet them. And then the next pasuk says, "Vayomer Adonai im namatzasi chen beinecha al nasavor mi'alav decha." So the Gemara in Shavuos has two opinions how you read that pasuk. Is that a whole reference to Adon? Is he saying plural? He's saying my masters, the people who I want to try to attend to, don't pass, don't skip over me, but instead come into the house? Or is that a reference to that kodesh? Is that a reference to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? And he's saying, God, listen, it's so nice of you to come visit, but please hold on, I have to go take care of these apparently human beings. So the notion is a pretty striking one, the idea that it's even more important to attend to guests than it is to mekabel pnei shechina. An interesting discussion in the Netziv and others, whether it's actually a mitzvah to be mekabel pnei shechina, how exactly does this dynamic play out. Rav Shach was quoted as observing that part of the logic behind it is that we know that chesed is a mandate upon us partially because of Vahalachta Bedrachav, that we're told to imitate God, and that appears at least 8 times in Sefer Devarim alone. And the Gemara tells us in a few places that the way you imitate God is through engaging in chesed. So that is particularly something that Avraham seems to have caught on to, and that's one of the themes of the Parsha, that he engages in chesed even more for his desire to become godlike. And perhaps, without getting into it in great detail, that's why even when he was recuperating, he still needed to be able to have a chesed workout, so to speak, so that he could further refine his ability to be godlike. So Rav Shach observed that in the sense of imitation is the greatest form of flattery, that whatever covet to HaKadosh Baruch Hu he's showing by receiving his panim, but it's even greater that he is going out and acting like God. So the idea that he would be Mekayim while after Midrachav, Avraham understood that that is a better fulfillment of whatever Hakbal Shnei HaShchina would have represented. It's interesting that the Rambam brings this lahalacha, this idea of Gedola, Hechnasas Orchim Yosem Hakbal Shnei HaShchina. And one could ask, it's not so likely to come up too often, what exactly does that mean practically for us? So there are nafkaminas lahalacha, perhaps, that the Baal Shem Tov understood it to mean that perhaps a person might feel when he's trying to think about his Shabbos table, he might think, okay, I could invite certain people over to my table, but they're not on the same level as I am in terms of spirituality, and it's going to affect the conversation, and if they're not here, we could have Divrei Torah, and we could have Zmiras, and we could have a very elevated Shabbos experience, and if we have to invite the guests, it's going to bring down the spirituality level. So says the Baal Shem Tov, that's the message here, that G'dola Hachnasas Orchem Yosef Me'akbal Shnei HaShchina, that better you should be involved in Hachnasas Orchem, rather than think that, okay, I'll feel the Shechina more at my Shabbos table if I don't necessarily have them here. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is also quoted as saying that it comes up, for example, if you need to leave the house to go to a minyan, but you have guests in the home who need to be taken care of. So once again, it could be a lemaisa that's more important to take care of the guests than to be mekabel the Shechina in the minyan. Rav Shechter, Shlitin Mepnine Harav, he has a fascinating connection that he understands this whole sugya to also have halachic implications that come up elsewhere. That the Mishnah says in Brachos, in the second parak, that there are times when, even though we don't want to talk in the middle of Kriya Shema, there's a prohibition of Hefsik, but if somebody needs to be greeted, so then you can greet someone in the middle of Kriya Shema. And there's a whole discussion in the Mishnah and the Gemara. There's basically three metrics. The question is, where exactly are you holding in Kriya Shema? Are you in the middle of a paragraph? Are you in between the paragraphs? Are you greeting someone as an initiation, or are you responding? That makes a big difference. And who is it? Is it somebody who has a concept of Yira that comes with him? Is it somebody who brings kavod with him? Is it an average person? So there are all kinds of different permutations. But Tzad HaShava is that there is a heter, at least under some circumstances, maybe an obligation, to interrupt Kriya Shema in order to greet people. So where does that come from? So Rav Shechter quotes from Rav Soloveitchik there that it comes from this, that G'dola Hachnasas Orchem Yosem Ekbalos Pnei HaShchina, that is rooted in not necessarily only bringing people into your house, but being mekabel them by greeting them and the like, which is an independent mitzvah. Sheila Shalom is an independent din. So therefore, we see from Avraham Avinu that can be more important than Kabbalah Shnei HaShchina. And he develops the whole point there about how there's different attitudes. We know sometimes we say, Bishvila Nivra Olam, the whole world is created for me. And other times we focus on the idea that we are nothing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he discusses there how Shema and Shemona Esrei are two different motifs. As he puts it, that Shema is a time where we emphasize the godless of humanity, so we would even interrupt Shema in order to show kavod to a human being, while Shemona Esrei is a time when we completely negate ourselves in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we don't interrupt Shemona Esrei for too many things. So there are perhaps some applications of this idea of G'dol HaKnesses Orchem Yosem Ekbalos Pnei HaShchina. And in any event, we do find brought la halacha that the needs of hachnasas orchim are considered to be urgent, shasetchak, and therefore there are certain kulas that come up in Hilcha Shabbos and elsewhere that relate to hachnasas orchim. The Tzitz Eliezer in his Shuvas writes that these kulas are rooted in the Oneg Shabbos connection. But in the Sefer Koch VeYitzchak of Yitzchak Sternhold, he disagrees with this, and he says that the kulas that we find in Hachnasas Orchim are based on Kvod HaBrios, that you respect human dignity by hosting guests, and that's why we are allowed certain kulas. Now, it's important to point out in that context that there are, in general, two dinim in Hachnasas Orchim. And this is part of the godless of Hachnasas Orchim, that Hachnasas Orchim has an aspect of tzedakah to it. Possibly, if somebody is hosting aniyim, so that is certainly a chesed, and it's really a compound chesed, that normally we talk about chesed shebegufo, the chesed that a person does with his body, with his time and attention, and chesed shebemamono, also known as tzedakah, the chesed one does providing material resources. So hachnasas orchim is actually a combination of both, because you spend money on your guests, giving them food and the like, and you also have to spend attention. You have to give them time. You have to attend to them physically. So it's a hybrid of both kinds of chesed. So certainly that's true when dealing with aniyim. If you have people who are either in general needy, or they may not necessarily be in the category of needy, but if they're dislocated from their home and they're traveling, so that also has a din, like a person who's needy, even if they have a large bank account, but right now they are away from home and they need to be taken care of. So that also has a notion of chesed that's associated with it. So on the one hand, you talk about hachnasas orchim as a chesed, as kind of a tzedakah-like act, and one that is particularly substantive because it involves a number of elements. But even without that, many of the Sfarim emphasize, and the Ma'aril and many others point out, that there is a notion of hachnasas orchim by itself, that just to create stronger social bonds is also a value. And therefore, even when you're not dealing with aniyim, you also have a mitzvah connected with hachnasas orchim. So those elements are both there. It's true, it seems like from the Ramah, that when it comes to kulas in Hilcha Shabbos and the like, that the Ramah sounds like that's only true when somebody is a guest, in the sense that they are needy or they are away from home. And it's not simply that you're inviting over your next door neighbor, but you are actually providing hospitality to someone who needs it. However, as many point out, the Rav Moshe Halberstam had a tshuva about this in a Sefer Divrei Moshe, that that's only regarding these issues in Hilcha Shabbos, for example. But the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim is broader and also includes people who are not necessarily needy, also includes people who you're having over for social reasons, and that's still considered to be a mitzvah. And as Ravitzka Zilberstein points out, he thinks that's still included in the idea of Gedol Hachnasas Orchim Yosa Me'akbalos Pnei Hashchina. This is brought in one of his farm, I think it's in Aleinu L'Shaveach. He had a story there about a certain Talmud Chacham who was leaving his house on Chol HaMoed, and he was going to go to a shir. And as he left, he saw a young couple approaching his house, his apartment, and they were relatives of his that decided to come visit. So he asked them to come back later because he was on his way to go hear a shir. So another Talmud Chacham witnessed this, and he saw that these guests, they were offended that he told them, come back, I'm going to go listen to a shir now. And they didn't come back later, they didn't come back at all. So this witness said to this original Talmud Chacham, he said, you're doing the wrong thing here. that Gedola Achnasas Arachem Yosem Ekbalos Pnei Ashchina. So you should have prioritized welcoming your guests rather than going to the shir. So the would-be host, or the wouldn't-be host, said that, no, that's only true if I'm hosting an Iyim, or I'm hosting somebody who really needs hospitality. But this was Dama, a social call, and not really Orchem, so it doesn't apply. And this witness said, no, I think you're wrong. There is still a concept of Gedol Hachnasas Orchem Yosem Ekbalos Pnei Ashchina, even when it's not a tzedakah case. And that's why Zilberstein seemed to understand it as well. I remember growing up that my father, Zichron Levrach, used to occasionally invoke on a Friday night, if things were getting too schleppy before we started eating, he used to quote the Chafetz Chaim, who said that you should have Shalom Aleichem later, not before you eat, because Shalom Aleichem is for the angels, and the angels don't get hungry, and human beings get hungry. So I remember hearing that frequently growing up. Eventually I got to research the topic, and I did see that quoted in many Sfarim, that the Chafetz Chaim was quoted as saying this, but there are two nuschos. Whether he said that stam when people were hungry, or guests who were hungry, or davka if you had aniyim at the table and they were hungry. So the most authoritative source that quotes the Chafetz Chaim on this point, and the Sefer Dvar Avram, he refers to this idea in the context of Baal Ta'acher. Now, we have a notion that you're not supposed to delay your donations, whether the donations to the Beis HaMikdash or tzedakah commitments. So he discusses there, if you have aniyim at your table who you're bringing into your house in order to provide them with food, so then maybe there's an issue of Baal Ta'acher. You can't keep them waiting around before giving them the food. And maybe it was in that context that the Chafetz Chaim said that you have to get right to the food and you can't sing for the angels before you take care of these guests. More recently, I saw that Rav Asher Weiss, in a Sefer that was published a few years ago about Friday night in Yonim, about Zmiris and things like that. So there he actually quotes somebody who said, an older person who said that in his youth, he was at the table of the Chafetz Chaim, and that was indeed his hanhaga to not stall the meal with Shalom Aleichem because of this consideration as well. So, hi.
But specifically when you had guests, though?
So maybe when you had guests, but not necessarily aniyim, I think, in that quotation, that was the way he had it. So that's where there's a little bit of a discussion as to how he applied it. So, as I mentioned, there's really a lot to say in the parsha. There's a lot to say about Hachnasas Orachim specifically, and this is going to segue into the Haftorah. There is a lot to comment, that as the Chafetz Chaim notes in a Sefer Avos Chesed, that the Torah goes into more detail here than anywhere else in terms of Avram's Chesed. It doesn't just say, oh, he took good care of these guests, but it goes into great detail about how he took care of these guests. So the message seems to be that we're supposed to learn from his behavior. So the Chafetz Chaim has various points that he derives from the psukim here. And after that, and before that, if you look at many of the mefarshim on these psukim, so you can find a lot of lessons that are gleaned from the description of Avram's chesed, what we should know about Hachnasas Orachim from this. So I wrote this up somewhere in much greater detail. You can read it there if you'd like. I'm not going to be able to go through all of them, but I'll just highlight a few ideas. So, for example, the Pasuk says, right after the Pasuk that we read before, where he said, please stop, so it says that, well, first it says, Vayoritz the Krosom, that we read already, that he ran to them. And some of the Sfarim point out that not only is he willing to host the guests, but he makes sure that they don't have to ask. He wants to save them the embarrassment of having to come and say, do you have any space? So he jumps up and he makes sure that he catches them first and he welcomes them in. So that was in Pasuk Beis that we saw before, but in Pasuk Dalet, it says, Yukachno mat mayim, barachasu raglechem, hisha'anu tachas ha'etz. So he tells them he should take a little bit of water. So what's pshat on a little bit of water? So there are many interesting comments about this. In the Chazal, Rashi quotes that the water was also there to help clean them off, that they were dirty and dusty from the travels, so he was offering them a little water to take care of themselves, which is also an indication of a broad view of how you can help. You're not just saying, I'll give you food, but you're looking for every possible way to attend to your guests. Some point out that in a modern context, this would involve showing your guests the restroom right away when they come from a long trip. So this ki'ilu was the equivalent of saying, I'll give you water. Sort of Shwadron commented that, so why does it say ma'at mayim? So that also reflects sensitivity, because essentially he's saying, I'll give you water so you can clean yourselves up a little bit. So you can imagine if he's basically conveying, wow, you guys look horrible, I'm going to bring you a ton of water so you can really fix everything. So that's also not going to be so nice. That's not going to make them feel good. So essentially it's a subtle way of saying it. Oh, you want to freshen up, I'll bring you a little bit of water. You don't need that much work, but I know you need to clean up, so here I'll bring you a little bit of water. It's also interesting that many Sfarim, including one of the Ravaji Yosef Sfarim, points out, maybe there's a kind of tangential point here in the Ma'at Mayim. There's a famous story of Rabbi Saul Salanter that there was once a rich man who invited Rabbi Saul Salanter to have a meal at his house, and he wanted to impress him with everything that he was able to provide. And he noticed that when Rabbi Saul went to wash his hands for the meal, that he washed very minimally. He used the least amount of water he could use. And he was surprised. He normally should wash with generous amounts of water. So he asked Rabbi Saul about it. Why are you washing so sparingly, using such small amounts of water? And Rabbi Saul responded that, yes, ideally it's good to use a lot of water, except I saw that the water that you have here is brought from the well some distance away, and it's brought by the housekeeper. It's brought by the woman who works in the house. And if I use a lot of water, she's going to have to make another trip down to the well in order to bring me more water. So it's nice that I'm using a lot of water to wash with, but it's going to be a bigger tircha on her to have to go back and forth. So I have to worry about that first. So therefore, he didn't use a lot of water. So maybe you see a hint of that here also, that it says, Yukachna ma'at mayim. Why here? It's just a little bit. Because the water was brought by someone else. The water was brought by Yishmael. So in order to not burden him too much, it was only a little bit of water. Now, it's interesting, why didn't Avram bring this water himself? We say that mitzvah bo yosu mi b'shlucho. So some suggest that's also a part of the sensitivity, that once he's saying, I'll bring you water to help clean yourselves up, so it's better that he not be the one to actually bring the water. It would make them feel uncomfortable. Others point out that this was part of the mitzvah of chinuch, that he wanted to make sure that his son saw what he was doing. He wants to involve the kids in the Hachnasas Orchim. And this is something that many people are sensitive to, that when they engage in hospitality, so they realize that it's not only a mitzvah, but it's also something that needs to be conveyed to the children. It's something that they should understand is a value that is crucial. So we also try to involve the kids in the Hachnasas Orchim. So perhaps that's what Avram was doing intentionally here, that he was having Yishmael bring the water. So okay, so maybe it shouldn't be so much water. So the pasuk goes on. Next pasuk says, "Ve'echa pas lechem v'sadu libchem achar tavoru." So we'll take a little bit of bread and you'll eat, and then you'll go. So why a little bit of bread? So that doesn't really seem to match, because then the psukim go on afterwards and tell us in great detail the fantastic suda that he made for them. It was much more than a little bit of bread. So the Gemara has a comment on this. We're familiar with this comment in its generalized sense. You don't always know that it's based on this. Mishnah Pirkei Avos has it in its general sense, that tzaddikim, what's their policy? Emor ma'at v'aseh harveh. So you should say only a little bit, and do much more. So we take that as a general value in life, that we should be more focused on doing than on saying, and not the opposite, as you sometimes find. But here the Gemara has it specifically in the context of Hachnasas Orchim, and the Marsha comments over there that that itself is a part of the sensitivity, because it's nice to provide your guests with a very extravagant and substantial meal, but it's better not to say that so much, because if you have people come to your house and you say, oh, I am going to go all out for you, I am going to kill myself to give you a beautiful meal, so they're going to feel uncomfortable and say, oh, please don't bother, that's not what we need. So it's better that he plays it down when he says what he's going to do. And then when he actually gives them the meal, it's certainly a very nice treatment. So that the Marsha points out, that's the relevance here, specifically in that context, that this isn't just a general life value, and mor ma'atva seharbei, which it is, but also in Hachnasas Orchim, it has an added level of relevance. But the Shaul Salanter himself, we mentioned him before as a story that was used to explain, but here is something that he observed, is that he notes that this is also fascinating because you see part of the gaonus of the chesed of Avram. You see that Avram's chesed was very well thought out. That, as we mentioned before, there's different types of hospitality. Sometimes you invite somebody who's needy and who's very, very hungry, and sometimes you invite somebody who's not needy and they're well fed in general, and you're having them over to be mechabed them and to show honor to them. So there's two different types of approaches that are relevant. Somebody who's needy and hungry, so as we said before, you don't want to delay getting them the meal, you want to feed them as expeditiously as possible. While somebody who's there to be a Reach HaKavod is there to be honored, so that requires a different approach. There you do things slowly and you do things at a much more leisurely pace. So Avraham Avinu was covering all his bases. That right away, first he brings out a little bit of bread because maybe they're very hungry. Maybe these are people who don't have any other food and they need to be attended to quickly. And then, once they've been given something so they're not starving, so then, in a more leisurely way, he gives them this very elaborate meal, which would have been more appropriate as a token of honor. So he's essentially covering his bases. Whatever is appropriate here, he's making sure that that's going to be addressed in the proper sense. It's also commented on many of the Svarim that it seems pretty funny to say, okay, so here, so you'll get a little bread, and you'll eat a little bit, and after that, achar tavoru, and then you leave. Sounds like a funny thing to say at the very beginning, by the way, okay, you'll leave after you eat. So here also, Svarim talk about what exactly is the focus here. So one approach that you find is that sometimes you invite a guest, and then the guest feels like, okay, I received benefit from this guy, so now I got to hang out and schmooze with him all day, even though I would rather go on my way. But how can I be rude and leave? So to that, Avraham is saying, listen, I'm only here to serve you. I'm happy to give you whatever you need to eat. And then you don't have to keep me company. You want to go, you can go. Nothing's going to get in your way. You shouldn't hesitate to come in thinking, oh, if I come in for a meal, I'm going to get stuck there forever. You should know that I'll give you what you need, and then you're going to be free to go right away. You're not going to have to wait around and hang with me. And that, again, covers a lot of bases, because he's not just providing them with food, but he's making sure to remove any concerns they might have of why they might not want to stop, and also to address their needs fully and say, maybe your needs are that you're going to have to leave right away, you don't have so much time, so okay, you'll be able to leave right away, you're not going to have to stick around with me. Others point out that maybe they'd be afraid that who knows what's in this food, who knows, maybe we'll be exhausted and we're not going to be able to move after this, or maybe it's going to be food that's going to make us uncomfortable in the long run. So Avraham was saying, don't worry, nothing's going to stop your path from continuing, you'll be able to stop here and eat, and then go ahead and you don't have to worry about anything. Okay, so again, there's a lot more to say about the psukim. Again, you can write it up if you want to read it, but that's just a sense, a little bit, of how Mefarshim comment on these psukim. So, as we said, it extends into the Haftorah. So in the Haftorah, which is how we got into this, so the Isha HaShunamis takes care of Elisha. It's also that she realizes that he is a holy man, which is also a part of what we find in Hachnasas Orchim, that in addition to the general mitzvah, so to attend to Talmidei Chachamim and to elevate the spirituality in your home by bringing Talmidei Chachamim into the home and taking care of them is considered to be a particular mitzvah. So that we find that she highlights as one of the reasons to take care of them. The pasuk says, "Vatomer Elisha, Hineinu Yadati ki Isha Elokim Kadoshu Over Aleinu Tamid." There is this holy man, I can tell. And the Gemara says that the women have more insight than the men into who is holy and who isn't. So she realizes that this is a chashuv person to have as a guest. And therefore she wants to provide him with lodging in an ongoing basis. So the pasuk says, following that, Nasa na alias kir katana, v'nasim lo sham mita, v'shulchan, v'chisei u'menorah. So she prepared a room for him with a bed and a table and a chair and a lamp. So this is also considered to be instructive in terms of Hachnasas Orchim. Rabbeinu Bachya talks about this in the Kat HaKemach. And he says that this is indication of the order that people need things in, that very often somebody comes in from a long journey. So they're tired. So you say to them, okay, listen, lie down a little bit. Here's a bed. And then I'll give you what to eat. And then you can eat afterwards. You don't have to rush right to the table when you're tired. And then afterwards, when it gets dark, that's when they're going to need the lamp. So the pasuk conveys the services that she was providing in the order in which it's going to come up. While the Kotzker Rebbe had a different understanding of why the bed is mentioned first, and he pointed out that really the Seder HaDvarim is going to be that the guest is going to eat first, but it's also important for his Yishuv Hadas to know that all your needs are taken care of. So essentially you should see first, okay, here is the bed, here is what you're going to need for your more involved hospitality needs, but practically speaking, okay, even if you're eating first, it's important to highlight that people should have Yishuv Hadas, that they are well taken care of. I remember that my aunt, Alei HaShalom, Goldie Fendel, was also a very big Machnesses Orchim. She was also tremendous with guests. And I remember once that we were waiting for a number of guests to come on a Shabbos lunchtime, and we were sitting around, spread around the table. And she said to us, we shouldn't spread around the table because the guests might come in the middle and it looks like there are no seats for them. It looks like that all the seats are filled. So better to not create that impression, because in addition to providing the food, you also have to provide Yishuv Hadas. A person shouldn't feel uncomfortable for a second that there is not enough to provide for them. So that's in essence what the Kotzker is saying here also, that you first let them know that here are all the accommodations, and then we'll get to the practicalities. The Chafetz Chaim also points out, based on the psukim here, this was a wealthy woman, as we see, this was a woman of stature, and she made sure to give the best of what she had to the guests. And this is what we also find brought down the halach, it's brought in the Mishneh Torah, it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that a part of providing, a part of hospitality, is not only to give, but to give the best of what you have. That's a part of the mitzvah. And that's also among the lessons that we learn from this Isha HaShunamis. So again, there's just so much to say. So for the next few minutes, maybe I'll just call attention to some of the other inyanim that come up in this Haftorah. So just to go back to the beginning, so the progression of the Haftorah is before the story of the Isha HaShunamis, The Haftorah tells the story of the wife of Ovadia. The Pasuk doesn't identify who it is, but that's we're told. But this is the wife of Ovadia, and she is worried because Ovadia was forced to borrow money beribis. And now it's being called in, and they don't have any money to pay. And the threat is they're going to take her two sons as avadim, that the king is going to come take her two sons as slaves. So she needs to find a way to settle things. So there is essentially a miracle that happens where Elisha tells her to get a hold of some vessels. She says, what kind of vessels do you have? And to pour from the oil that she has into the vessels. And apparently there is a nace, and the oil increases and increases in value, and she's able to sell that and take care of all the problems. So it's interesting that she asks, you know, what do you have in the house in terms of being able to get started and being able to contain the oil? So one could ask, since this is all miraculous anyway, why couldn't there just be miraculous vessels provided? Why is there a need for there to be this first step? And the Gemara has an idea that Ein HaBracha Shorer Al Kli Rekum, that bracha doesn't take effect on nothing. You need to have some kind of basic holder for miracle, and or some little bit in which to start with. There's a din that's derived from this. I remember Rav Schechter asking this on one of his bechinas, and it was like such a out-of-the-blue question, but because he mentioned it in Parshas here, so here we are. That this must have been Parshas Vayera, that there's a din when you bench, so you're supposed to leave some bread, some remnants of the bread on the table during benching. And it's based on this idea that in benching, so you're asking for continued bracha and sustenance, so you want to have a little bit there to say, okay, we would like more. But we don't want to have nothing. We want to say, okay, we have a little bit of bracha. We want it to increase. And this is a sefer, Musar HaNevi'im. It was written by a Rav from Denver many years ago, commenting on the Divrei Chazal that are found concerning the Nevi'im. So he notes about this idea that he thinks the imagery is, why do we care that you should have a little bit in order to get more bracha? Why is that a part of the way things operate? So he explains that it's possible to be blessed from that which other people provide, especially if you are a productive member of society, that if you have, let's say, a working marketplace where you provide a little bit to others and then they provide for you, and everyone benefits from that type of cooperation. So that's the appropriate way the world should work, that you provide a little bit, and through that you're able to gain from the synergy of everyone working together. But the opposite of that is you have ganavim, you have people who steal from others, and that's how they provide for themselves. So that's represented by somebody who doesn't put anything in, who just takes. So we want the imagery here to be that the bracha is chal on somebody who participates positively, who has a little bit to put in. So that's where this notion comes from. Okay, but in any event, so we find then after that story, then we have the story of the Isha Shunamis, who takes care of Elisha, as we mentioned, and we talked about her Achnasas Archim. On that pasuk, where it tells us everything she provided, the Gemara has a little bit of a cryptic statement that Harot Selehano Sihana Kalisha, that somebody who wants to benefit from others, they can do so, like Elisha, and somebody who doesn't want to benefit from others also should not do so, like we find by Shmuel. So what's the statement there? Basically, you do what you want, you could do this, you could not do that. What exactly is the thrust of that statement? So in the Musar HaNevi'im again, he comments that there is an angle to both. There is an advantage to both. That on the one hand, you could see why people would not want to benefit from others. We have a notion of Sone Matanos Yichyeh, you're not supposed to want other people to provide for you. and you shouldn't want to take from staka if you don't have to. So there is a value of not wanting to take from other people. On the other hand, there is also a negative message that comes if you don't take from other people, because you're basically saying you don't trust them, you're not giving them any opportunity to interact with you, so people often want you to be nene from them. So there's a tzad to both, so since they both have a value to them, so therefore we can leave it as your personal discretion, which is a way of emphasizing that there is a positive spirituality that can be found in both directions. Okay, so to go on a little bit, so then this, in one of the major connections to the parasha again, so here you find that Elisha wants to help out this Isha HaShunamis who goes to such lengths to take care of him. And he says, can I speak to someone on your behalf? And she says, no, I'm not interested in calling any attention to me. And she has the famous phrase here, Basocha mi anochi yashavis. You don't have to draw anybody's attention to me. But he wants to do something for her. And Gehazi points out that here she doesn't have any children. So he makes her a bracha that she's going to have a son. And she's very nervous that this shouldn't be a false hope. She says, don't promise me something that's not going to turn out, that he's not going to survive, or the like. And it turns out that, well, she does have a son, but then things get scary because the son collapses after he grows up, after he's older already. So he collapses, and apparently he dies. So Elisha is called in, and before he does anything, so there's a line here which Chazal comment on, seems to go in a completely different direction, but when they call out to him, so he says, why are you coming to me? And where's the line here? Hold on a second. So he says to her, why are you coming to me? Lo chodesh v'lo rego. It's not, it's no special day. It's not Shabbos. It's not Rosh Chodesh. So the Gemara, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and the Maseches Sukkah, derives from here that, in general, there is an inyan, lahakbil p'nei rabo b'rego, that you should visit your Rebbe on Yantif. Remember when I was learning in yeshiva, I think on Sukkot, on Chol Moed Sukkot, went to a Simchas Beis at Shoeva. I believe it must have been in Netzach Yisrael, where Rav Gushman, Zichron Lebracha, was the Rosh Yeshiva. And there was a couple of surprise guests. Remember that Rav Hirschsprung, Zichron Lebracha from Montreal, was also there. And he spoke. So he gave a speech to everyone who was assembled there. He said, it's good that you came here, because Chayiv Odom Lekabel Pnei Rabo Berego, you have to come to your Rebbe on Yontif. And he said, Rav Gustman Shlita is the Gadol Ador, and the Gadol Ador is the Rebbe from the Dor. He says that the Gadol Ador is the Rebbe of the generation, so you have to come on Yontif to be Mekabel Panim. So there is a discussion what exactly this whole idea is, this notion of greeting one's Rebbe on Yontif. Is that because of the Rebbe, or is that because of the Yontif? Is the idea that there's a special inyan in Kavod Talmidei Chachamim on Yontif, is that what it's there for? It's interesting, the Rambam brings this in Hilchos Talmud Torah, while the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch don't bring it at all. That's also interesting. Or is it an idea of Yontif, that it will enhance your Yontif to visit the Rebbe on Yontif and to get the spiritual elevation from that? So it's interesting, we have opposite approaches in the Rode Behuda and his Tshuvas, and Behonis and Eibshitz in the Yaros Dvash, that the Rode Behuda understood that the reason this isn't in Shulchan Aruch is because it was only Nogeya in the Zman HaMikdash, that when we made Aliyah LaRegel, so then there was also an inyan to be makabel the panim of the Rebbe. But if we're not making Aliyah L'Regel, so then it doesn't make sense that we're going to be mechabed the Rebbe more than we are mechabed the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So after there's no Beis HaMikdash, we don't have this idea anymore. And that's why it's not brought in the Shulchan Aruch, it's brought in the Rambam, because the Rambam always writes about everything, even if it's not in the Gay at the moment. But it's not in the Shulchan Aruch for that reason. And Javonis and Aibshitz in the Aris Devash, he essentially has the opposite point. And he said that really this was Davka enacted when there is no Beis HaMikdash, because this is what gives us at least some opportunity to be mekabel the Pnei Hashchina, to kind of connect to what we spoke about at the beginning of this parsha discussion, that we talked about Kabbalah's Pnei Hashchina. So too on Yontif, if it could be Ola Regel, so you're mekabel the Pnei Hashchina. But if you can't, so then the next best thing to do is to go to the Rebbe. So he says it kind of the opposite of the Nod Behuda, that this was Davka enacted as a practice when there was no Beis HaMikdash. And that explains the language in the Pasuk, because the Pasuk, as many Sfarim try to figure out, that here we're talking about Yontif, and it's derived from a Pasuk which doesn't mention Yontif. It mentions Rosh Chodesh and mentions Shabbos, which is not the Regel. So what exactly is going on here? So Rosh Chodesh said, that's the point, that when there was a Beis HaMikdash to go to, so on the Regel, they went to the Beis HaMikdash. And on Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, when you didn't have a Beis HaMikdash to go to, so then you'd go to the Rebbe, and that's what the Pasuk was implying. But after the Churban, so then you should go on Yontif. It's also clear from the Gemara that this does not mean that you should abandon your family on Yontif. It means that if it's possible to be Mekabel L'Rabo and also to be home with your family for Yontif, so that's what we're talking about. So in any event, so they bring in Elisha, and Elisha is able to do a miracle, which we read elsewhere is also something that Eliyahu HaNavi, that his Rebbe, had also done. But essentially, he revives the dead. Ein lecha miracle gadol mizeh. And I should point out, by the way, just very quickly, but you can take a look. Recently, they came out with a sefer Emes LeYaakov on Nach. Now, the Emes LeYaakov of Yaakov Kamenetsky on Chumash has been around for a very long time, but only in the past year or two they published, say, for the volume on Nach with his comments on Nevi'im Ksuvim. So on this parak, in the beginning of the fourth parak of Malachim Beis, he has a whole discussion here of why Yirmiyahu, according to the Gemara in Baba Basra, is the author of Sefer Malachim. So why does Yirmiyahu spend time telling us about these miraculous deeds of Elisha and Elio, what's the purpose for us? And he has an interesting discussion about whether this is relevant to Emuna. And he quotes the Chayada, we shouldn't base our Emuna on miracles, we should base it on the Masorah. So there's an interesting, this goes on for a few pages, an interesting discussion there Yaakov Kamenetsky has about why exactly we're told these stories. And one of the points he makes is that part of the godless of Elisha and Elio is, yes, the bad Nevi'ei HaBaal, the bad guys, so they're able to pull off all kinds of miraculous looking things also. But here, Elisha and Elio, they specifically help people with their miracles, which is also a part of the message. I should point out also that in the same Sefer, Yaakov has a long discussion about the point of Makabel Pnei Rabo Beregel and what exactly is its focus. There's a lot about that there as well. But in any event, he has a long discussion about why does the Navi here tell us about these miraculous stories. But essentially, it seems that he brought him back to life, that he did something pretty amazing here. So the Pasuk says, Vayal vayishka vahayelad vayosim piv al piv eina velena vachapo vachapo vayigar alav vayacham psar hayelad. So basically, he brought him back to life through what sounds a little bit to the modern ear like CPR. Like he essentially was able to resuscitate him in a manner that sounds similar to what we're now familiar with. And that's a fascinating parallel. So there is a wonderful article about this by my dear friend, Rabbi Dr. Eddie Reichman, in the volume and Mitoch Oel and Haftorahs, which we've mentioned most of the past few weeks. So in that volume, Rabbi Eddie Reichman has a very, very fascinating article about this notion, about the apparent resuscitation of the Shunammite boy by Elisha, and he gives you every reference you could want to know about where in the medical literature and where in the halachic literature and where in the Tanakh literature there is analysis of this whole episode. And there's quite a lot to say and quite a lot that's referred to that you can look up at. You can look up from that article. But just one of the points, so the Gemara, Maseches Nida, Daf Ayin Amud Beis, the Gemara raises the question of whether this young man is metame tumas meis. And the Gemara says that it's only the dead that are metame, it's not the living that are metame. And there's a lot of discussion in general in the halachic literature of what would happen if somebody was revived from the dead. For example, would he have to remarry his wife? Do we assume that once he died, so the marriage is ended by that? And if he comes back to life, he has to remarry her? Or do we say all mitzvos are a question because a meis chavshi, and then once he becomes alive again, is he now re-obligated to mitzvahs? All kinds of fascinating discussions that you can find in the literature that sometimes draw upon this whole discussion and this whole episode here. But also one of the specific points that Poskim had invoked, there is a question in terms of organ transplants. Not to get involved in the brain death discussion here, which is a much more involved discussion, although that also draws upon some of this literature in terms of when is a person deceased and when are they able to still be revived. But brain death is a crucial question in terms of organ transplants, because some organs can only be transplanted as long as the heart is still beating. But let's not focus on that question. What about taking organs that can still function after the person is brain dead and heart dead? So can that be taken from a dead body to save someone else's life? So for pikuach nefesh purposes, the answer should be yes, even though there are potentially surim. Again, brain death involves the question of ritzicha, that's a bigger issue. But even without that, let's say a person is definitely dead according to everyone, so to take their organs would seem to be problematic, because we have prohibitions of hanah min hames and nivul hames. We're not allowed to cut up a deceased body, and we're not allowed to benefit from a dead body. So if it's pikuach nefesh, okay, so then pikuach nefesh, it doesn't outweigh ritzicha, which is why the brain death issue is so tricky. But it does outweigh these lavin, these prohibitions of hanah min hames and nivul hames. Okay, so for pikuach nefesh, you can do it. But what if it's not pikuach nefesh? Let's say, for example, cornea transplants, which have been around for about 100 years, but was discussed a little bit more 50 years ago. So if you take a cornea from someone who's deceased and you implant that into a living person, so you can restore their eyesight. But is that called pikuach nefesh? Is that something that pushes away other yisurim? Jebediah?
Is there a Maimon Chazal that says that a blind person is like the dead?
So it's interesting. There is one Gemara that says that, which seems to be symbolic. Same way you say, like, ani chashiv kemes, etc. But there's also a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that sounds like a threat to the eye is pikuach nefesh. So there's a whole discussion what to do with that, because it's not obvious medically why that's true. So theoretically, somebody might have their eye threatened, and the doctors can tell you that it's for sure not going to threaten their lives. And the question of how that relates to pikuach nefesh issues is an interesting one. But aside from those makaros, so there is a whole discussion in Poskim whether this is justifiable without the pikuach nefesh. So there was a tshuva, it's most well known as a tshuva Rav Unterman. As Dr. Eichmann points out, there was a very similar position, overlapping position, that was also put forward by Rav Chaim Regensburg. But it's more well known from the writings of Rav Unterman, who was one of the chief rabbis of the state of Israel, where he suggested, based on this Gemara Nida, that just like you find by Elisha, that okay, if by the boy that Elisha revived, that all right, maybe when he was dead, maybe there's a tumor concern, but once he's alive again, so it's not metame. So you should perhaps be able to say here also that when the organ is placed in the body of the person, so now it's alive again. So now it's a part of a living system. So it's not going to be subject to concerns of hanam and hames, or nivel hames, or of tuma for tumas kohen. If a kohen was going to receive such a transplant also, so it would be considered as if it was reborn, and it wouldn't be subject to these yisurim. You still have to figure out how you can get it that far. Something that was also discussed, that Sitz Eliezer and others had various objections, that was among them. But this is among the points that is invoked in the halachic literature dealing with this whole story, and with the Eliyahu story as well. But this story even more is invoked in many different contexts in the literature, and it's very helpful to have Dr. Reichman's article where he provides many, many makoros on this subject. So again, there's a lot to say, even in the Haftarah by itself. There's a lot to say in Parshas Vayera, really one of the most intense and dense parshios that we have. We're not even getting onto the Akedah, but so many other things that you could talk about. So unfortunately, we don't have the whole year to talk about Parshas Vayera. We just have this brief time, but hopefully we got to get a little bit of a sense of some of which is contained not only in the Parsha, but in the Haftarah as well. Okay, who wants to daven for us? Any volunteers? Good day.